Hello and welcome to the programme. I'm Danielle Ozarova and we begin with a brief domestic news bulletin. On a one-day visit to Prague, German Chancellor Gerhard Schröder said the continuing row over the post-war expulsion of Sudeten Germans from Czechoslovakia could not affect the excellent relations that Czechs and Germans have today. He was referring to a weekend meeting of the Landsmannschaft in Bavaria, where Bavaria's Prime Minister Edmund Stoiber hurled criticism at the Czech authorities for not revoking the Beneš decrees, which formed a legal basis for the expulsions of some 2.5 million Sudeten Germans from post-war Czechoslovakia. The manner in which he made the demand has ruffled feathers in Prague, and deputies of the ruling Social Democratic Party have called on the Czech foreign minister to put Mr. Stoiber in his place. Pouring oil on troubled waters, the visiting German chancellor said the views expressed at the Landsmannschaft meeting had been extreme and marginal. He said that while he respected the personal tragedies accompanying the post-war expulsion, causes and consequences should not be mixed up. A deputy for the Christian Democratic Party has suggested World War II freedom fighters who later served the communist cause should be stripped of their merits. Josef Janáček argued that it was morally wrong for people who had supported a totalitarian regime to have the title of freedom fighters. It is wrong that people who enjoyed privileges from the communists after the war should be placed on the same rank as those who remained true to their ideals and who were persecuted for their beliefs after the communist takeover, Janáček said. According to him, this would concern tens, possibly hundreds of war veterans. The Czech Foreign Ministry has advised Czech nationals not to travel to Uzbekistan, where over 700 people are believed to have been killed in the bloody suppression of a rebellion last Friday. Popular anger is simmering in the eastern part of the country and troops are allegedly out in force. The local authorities and travel agencies maintain that everything is under control and there is no danger for foreign tourists. The Czech Foreign Ministry statement has asked those who cannot put off their trip to Uzbekistan to contact the Czech embassy in Tashkent for relevant information. And finally, we'll take a look at the weather forecast. Wednesday is expected to be overcast with scattered showers and day temperatures between 11 and 15 degrees Celsius. I'm Daniela Lazarova and that's the end of the news.
This is Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Pavla Horáková. The second Czechoslovak president, Edvard Beneš, has a new statue in Prague, but some political groups in Germany call it a provocation. Czechs have spent almost half a billion crowns as a result of the national ice hockey team's successes at the World Championship, and a current exhibition addresses the challenge of design for the blind. And later on, you can hear the second part of Ian Willoughby's interview with the former Czech foreign minister and president of the United Nations General Assembly, Jan Kavan. All that, as well as a new edition of Czech Science, is coming up, so please stay tuned. A memorial to the second Czechoslovak president, Edvard Beneš, was unveiled on Monday in front of the Foreign Ministry headquarters near Prague Castle. President Beneš is not as widely popular today as his predecessor, Tomáš Garrigue Masaryk, but he's still very much respected among many Czechs, who see Edvard Beneš as a champion of democracy and a fighter against Nazism. Their view is, however, not shared by some Sudeten Germans, ethnic Germans expelled from Czechoslovakia after World War II, who blame President Beneš for their plight. Martin Mikula has more.
The unveiling ceremony was widely attended by a number of politicians, including the Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek, but above all by many Czech veterans, members of the anti-fascist resistance movement and of the patriotic association Sokol. The speakers stressed President Edvard Beneš's merits, especially his leadership of the London-based government in exile during the Second World War and his fight against Nazism. The chairman of the lower house of parliament, Lubomír Zaorálek.
It seems to me that right now, when we, maybe a few days ago, we discussed the anniversary of 60 years from the war, maybe it is the right time to speak about this history in this country. And you know very well that Edvard Beneš was one of the great fighters, one of the great warriors on the side of Churchill and King Wilhelmine and de Gaulle. And it is the part of this gallery of great warriors of Second World War. He was on the side of democracy, freedom and justice in this war against a cruel Nazi regime.
Joy Karechkova from Great Britain has served in RAF, the Royal Air Force, during the war. She married a Czech pilot and worked for the Beneš government in exile during the war. She found the installation of the memorial to Beneš deeply satisfying.
He represents Czechoslovakia, as it was at that time. He did his job well in London. Everybody held him in great respect. And I think he deserves this very belated honor which has been bestowed on him. 65 years too late.
But the memorial installation was not welcomed by everyone. The German expellees, who were forced to leave Czechoslovakia after the war, view President Beneš as someone who has taken a great part in their expulsion, and they strongly criticized the memorial installation. At the gathering of Sudeten Germans in the town of Augsburg last weekend, the Prime Minister of the German Federal State of Bavaria, Edmund Stoiber, compared Beneš to Stalin and called the Beneš memorial installation a provocation. But Lubomír Zaorálek strongly rejected this characterization of President Beneš.
I feel very sorry about it, because it is impossible to have Beneš in one range with Stalin. It's something impossible and absurd, because what I said, Mr. Beneš was founder, with Mr. Masaryk was founder of this state in 1918. It is attack, also is attack against Masaryk, this attack against the state, and that's why I feel very sorry that it was said something like this in Germany. But I hope that it's only minority opinion, and for me it is very important that I really know great democratic European politics in Germany, which are very good partners. Also, it seems to me that very good conceive what is important, what is must for us, and they are willing also to accept this respect to Beneš figure.
But President Edvard Beneš is not free of criticism even in the Czech Republic. In the Munich Agreement in the autumn of 1938, the Allies agreed to allow Hitler to annex the Czech border regions in an effort to appease him. Some believe that Beneš's subsequent decision not to defend Czechoslovakia militarily was unforgivable. Others take issue with Beneš's own appeasement policy after the war towards the communists and the Soviet Union, and say he made the bloodless coup of February 1948 and communist accession to power easier. Still, on the whole, while opinion is divided on his policies, Edvard Beneš himself remains one of the most respected political figures in Czech modern history.
Martin Mikula with that report.
My jsme dostali medaile, my jsme dostali pohár, ale hlavní důvod, vidíme tady, proč hrát hokej, to jste vy.
Czech star forward Jaromír Jágr, thanking a crowd of some 30,000 ice hockey fans who gathered in Prague's Old Town Square on Monday afternoon to welcome home the Czech national team. Monday was a day of celebration for many Czechs after the country's ice hockey team won the Ice Hockey World Championship in Vienna on Sunday, again after 4 years.
Úžasný, prostě nemělo to chybu, tyjo. Prostě jsme mistři!
Many foreign tourists strolling around the historic old town were baffled at the enormous crowd of mostly young people wearing ice hockey outfits and with the Czech tricolour painted on their faces. But the players themselves and their fans are not the only ones who have a reason to rejoice these days. Czechs spent an estimated $500 million, or $22 million, as a direct result of the country's successes at the championships. Hectolitres of beer were drunk in pubs, and pub owners also recorded a greater demand for champagne. According to them, the number of people who prefer watching the games in pubs and sport bars is on the increase, which may be a result of better technical equipment. Also, many more women came to watch the games in pubs and bars this year. Retailers, too, have reason to celebrate. Electronics retail chains reported a 400% growth in the sales of TV sets during the championship. Especially popular were large plasma TVs. The sales of bottled beer and various snacks went up too, as well as the sales of ice hockey outfits and souvenirs. Mobile phone operators report a 300% increase in the number of SMS text messages sent on the days when important matches were played. The only businesses that are complaining are Czech bookmakers. Although Czechs bet hundreds of millions of crowns and won back tens of millions, some bookies say they lost on the championships and others say they barely made any profit. And now on to a different topic. All of us, at one time or another, have suffered the misery of poorly designed objects, the spill-proof bottle that leaks, the vase with poor center of gravity, an impossible-to-reach computer jack. If, however, you are visually impaired or blind, even well-designed objects can be a misery. A new exhibition currently underway at the National Technical Museum in conjunction with the Prague City Museum addresses the problem of design in everyday objects for the visually impaired. It presents new solutions where there have often been few in the past. Jan Wellinger has more.
Design in the Dark is one of those exhibitions that will stay in your mind for months, the culmination of a year's work by over 100 students from 12 different schools addressing the problems of the blind. Objects they designed are for the everyday. Kitchenware, household utensils, clothes, and even games such as chess or pexeso. A combination of proper aesthetic choices made them fully accessible for the non-sighted. Lenka Žižková was the project's curator.
In this project, it's important to stress that function gained precedence over all other design elements. The young designers who took part needed to address specific needs of the blind, and that was something they had to incorporate fully. They couldn't just let their imagination go wild.
A simplification and balance of various design elements make various items accessible to those on whom they would otherwise be lost. Punchy buttons, braille text, well-defined edges, but also the use of sound and color are all addressed. The last is extremely important considering how many visually impaired retain some sight, whose lives can be significantly improved by the right balance of color and light. Shades that are easier to discern, for example, include pastel greens and pinks, as opposed to, say, white on white. In practice, a white plate on a white tabletop is virtually invisible to the poor of sight. Viktor Dutr from Czech Blind United was one of those consulted on the project. He told me he was very pleased with the results.
Pražské vysoké školy umělecko-průmyslové své problémy konzultovalo a to bylo velice radostné.
Cooperation between the schools in consultation with the blind and experts was also very important and constructive indeed. The students had great ideas and I'm really excited by some of the projects on display.
Opravdu jsou tam dobré myšlenky, které mohou pomoci, jestli najdou někde praktické uplatnění.
Curator Lenka Žižková also views the project as a success, saying it was very interesting, on the whole, to see the impact design for the blind had on students' lives.
Working within such limits, they realized design's full worth, helping people who did not even expect it. It was an intense project, and individuals' designs had to go through extensive development and repeated changes. They really gave it their all.
There are an estimated 100,000 visually impaired and blind people in the Czech Republic, and it's obvious most would benefit from a wider availability of products meeting their needs. Those behind Design for the Dark would now like to see at least a few manufacturers take interest in licensing some of the products on display. The exhibit features only prototypes for now. But it's possible that some of the designs could be picked up in the future for wider release.
That report by Jan Wellinger. And now for Radio Prague's weekly feature, Czech Science. There's a saying in Czech, Zlaté české ručičky, which translates as golden Czech hands, and points to the nation's unique ability to create and innovate under even the worst of conditions. Great Britain, known as one of the most innovative countries in the world today in the field of science, has launched a new project to get British scientists to work alongside some of their golden-handed Czech counterparts. The idea is to get them to work in concert to find ways of improving and speeding up the process of innovation. The project, under the auspices of the British Embassy in Prague, focuses on innovation policy, the legislation framework, case studies from Czech and UK innovation parks, and the exchange of experience and knowledge. Dieter Asiedu spoke to the British Embassy's science and technology officer, Dr. Otakar Foyt.
Czech Republic is one of the most innovative countries from new EU member states. That is the reason why Great Britain decided to set up a post of attaché scientific in their embassy in Prague. And that's why we are organizing these mutual conferences, seminars and workshops to share their experience and to develop a bit further. Czech Republic has got great potential with Academy of Sciences, many universities both in general and in technology field, and what is needed at the moment is just to grab these opportunities and move them forward from end of research through commercialization of the ideas to the successful companies and businesses.
Is there something that the UK can learn from us here?
I think that UK can learn many things as well, mainly how to do research with much less money, because this is the traditional Czech way which Czech researchers has to go with.
Can you give us some concrete examples as to where Czechs have been really good at innovating?
One of the good examples can be Otto Wichterle, the inventor of contact lenses, which can be something to show to the rest of the world, and Czechs are proud of this name of this professor.
And is there something from a more modern past, something from the last decade?
I'm aware only of some of them, and I wouldn't like to be specific, just to pinpoint one and forget all others. But there is very good quality of stem cell research and embryonic stem cell research in the Czech Republic. There are very good research projects in biotechnology. There are some very promising projects in nanotechnologies and in many other fields, new materials included. Czech Republic used to be very innovative and country with a high technology potential, even from old communist times, and this potential remains in the country and goes forward.
Dr. Otakar Feucht ending that edition of Czech Science. You're tuned to Radio Prague, where it's now time for our interview program One-on-One, and today Ian Willoughby's guest is the former Czech Foreign Minister and President of the United Nations General Assembly, Jan Kavan.
Jan Kavan has been Czech Foreign Minister and President of the United Nations General Assembly. But Mr. Kavan has also been involved in many controversies, and for years fought a legal battle to clear his name after being accused of collaborating with the communist-era secret police. In the 1980s, he won a case against a British TV station, which claimed dissidents had been arrested when their names were found in a van he used to smuggle banned literature into Czechoslovakia. Here in the second of a two-part interview, Jan Kavan gives his side of the story.
Altogether, I've sent around 65 or 66 such vans. During those 20 years, only one was ever caught, and this was this one in April 1981, as a result of betrayal, maybe a strong word, but as a one man began to talk to the Czech Secret Service, and the van was detained. It's true that at the time, or shortly after that, there was a British documentary, which among other things claimed that there was a list of names and addresses of Czech dissidents, and that this list led to arrests of Czech dissidents. No one was arrested because his or her name was in the van. They've arrested around seven Charter 77 signatories, some of them because they had an informer, some others because they were well-known writers, in fact, whose books were in large quantities in the van. And the secretary clearly speculated, in some cases correctly, in some cases not correctly, that they had something to do with the distribution network. They couldn't really put together a proper convincing case. And also as a result of the international campaign, which I helped to organize, they were eventually all released, the last ones, 1 year after detention in spring 1982.
You came back here after the revolution. And not so long afterwards, you were accused of having collaborated with the STB. You cleared your name in the courts, but a lot of people have a kind of attitude of no smoke without fire. How does it feel to be officially cleared, but I think it's fair to say suspected still by many people of having collaborated?
I'm aware of this perception that there is no smoke without fire. There's a similar Czech proverbs. On the other hand, I wouldn't exaggerate what you said, a feeling that many people still believe. In fact, I now come across very few people who believe it. Although it was, of course, a very bitter disappointment when that happened in early months of 1991, when I was a member of the federal parliament, to be accused, or to be accused by one's friends, by one's allies, to be accused of working allegedly for one's enemies, is a very bitter thing. I had a kind of a strange feeling that history is being repeated, because on a different level, the same thing happened to my father when in the 1950s he was accused by his own comrades that he allegedly worked for the other side against the interest of his own country. And that after losing his mother and his relatives were killed in the fascist concentration camps, and after spending the war fighting and being twice badly injured in the army. That must have, to him, felt as a terrible injustice, and I felt the accusation against me as a terrible injustice. Many friends told me, you know, this is what happens after revolutions. Revolutions begin to devour their own children. And in fact, unlike 50s, there were no executions. So, in a way, that was a major progress. And as you have said yourself, the courts have eventually cleared me, although it took far longer than I expected. It took a full 5 years.
I think it's also fair to say, though, you've been involved in many controversies over the years. Sometimes it seems there is a kind of unrelenting wave of accusations of various kinds. Does it ever drive you to want to leave public life, to actually quit politics, for instance? I saw one time in a newspaper a headline, Cavan is a liar, or Cavan lied in Mladá Fronta.
Yeah, Mladá Fronta is one of the newspapers which was involved in several media campaigns against me. And they are all very painful, despite the fact that over the years one does get used to political media campaigns. Sometimes it works. Sometimes it works for some time. But then they usually overdo it. They usually go so far and so much they exaggerate the accusations without any substance, without any proof, that people begin to get fed up with it and it turns against them, becomes counterproductive.
You've been Czech Foreign Minister, you have been the President of the General Assembly of the United Nations, but more recently, since the departure of your friend Miloš Zeman as Chairman of the Social Democrats, you've been somewhat sidelined in the party. How is it adjusting to a life, relatively speaking, on the margins?
Mm-hmm. It's not a problem at all. My life was up and down more or less from my childhood till today. So I don't mind being sometime at the top, minister, deputy prime minister, president of the UN General Assembly, and then next day being down. And if being down means being a member of parliament, and I'm at the moment deputy president of the Foreign Affairs Committee of the parliament, which is an important one, and I was recently elected deputy leader of the Social Democratic Parliamentary Faction. That's a very important function. I don't think then that's that many people in this country would perceive that as being really down. It gives me slightly more time than I had before. And as far as I'm concerned, I continue to fight for the same ideals I had as a teenager or in my early 20s for a more just world by those methods available to me at any given time. And if it's to be a student leader, a dissident, an emigre, or a foreign minister or member of parliament, it makes no difference. I can always find methods which are adequate to the moment to fight for the same ideals and frequently with the same people.
Ian Willoughby's interview with Jan Kavan brings our program to a close. If you'd like to let us know what you think about our broadcast, the address to write to is Radio Prague, 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic, or much quicker, at english@radio.cz. Thank you for joining us, and please tune in again or visit our website at www.radio.cz. Till next time, from me, Pavla Horáková, and everyone here in Prague, goodbye.
Znamení, ať víš kam jít. A ty dáváš mi znamení, ať venka mít. Dávám ti znamení, ať zase víš kam jít. Dáváš mi znamení, ať venka mít. Piju to tvoje zlý víno, samá voda. Samá voda, je to samá voda. Ale kosa na kámen,
kosa na kámen
narazí, kosa na kámen,
kosa na kámen
to tě zamrazí,
to tě zamrazí,
kosa na kámen,
kosa na kámen
je tvý svědomí
černý,
kosa na kámen.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Ondes Courtes. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 9415, 7345. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz.